My doctor was worried about my high cholesterol, so he recommended Cheerios.
Cheerios are the ready-to-eat morsels of oat goodness that can decrease cholesterol up to 10%.
And unlike other cholesterol medications, Cheerios comes in great flavors like frosted, honey nut, apple cinnamon, berry burst, and new banana nut.
Cheerios are not for everyone. Side effects, including excessive crunching, milk slurping, and desperate attempts to find the secret toy surprise have been reported.
10% lower never tasted so good.
Reduce your cholesterol with a delicious part of this complete breakfast. Ask your doctor or the kid who bags your groceries if Cheerios are right for you.
I'm glad I did.
Other stations, props, outstanding content. But when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to LATalkRadio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Automatic Tax Extension Filer.
Mr. Automatic Tax Extension Filer.
You've known for months that tax day was coming up, but you just keep putting off filling out those forms like putting off a visit to the proctologist.
Yes, the two are similar.
It's automatic, Mr. Automatic Tax Extension Filer, which means that you don't even have to come up with a lame, albeit creative excuse.
My dog ate my W-2.
You put the pro in procrastination.
Why can't you take?
So on April 15th, forget the long form, short form, or easy. Just mail off Form 4868 and breathe a six-month sigh of relief, just like Mr. Automatic Tax Extension Filer, a real American hero.
Automatic Tax Extension Filer.
Late penalty and interest will still apply.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio. Get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
And good morning, and it is Wednesday, March 31st. It's the last day of March. Remember, we just said the other day it was the first day of March.
Did we? Oh, yeah.
So this thing is like flying by, you know?
Man, and you know, and not that, I mean, I'm rocking about 10 W-2s. I got about 10 I need to file. So I was listening to that.
God.
I was like, man, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. Mm. Well, do you do your taxes yourself?
Oh, yeah. There's not a whole lot to, I mean, it's just input, enter. I do it like TurboTax.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have like
That's cool. Yeah, you don't need, you just follow the interview and...
There's not a whole lot to work with here. It's just, what did you make? Okay, deductions, do you want to do your own or do you want to take what we already offer? I'm like, the one you have sounds better than mine.
Yeah.
Let's go with that. And it's pretty easy. I mean, it's just a matter of making myself do it.
Yeah.
But it's really fun.
Yeah.
Besides a business owner or somebody that has employees or whatever, maybe, you know.
Yeah, pain in the ass.
It's all a pain in the ass.
But definitely, I mean, when you have a refund coming, then you definitely do it sooner than April 15th, you know?
Yeah, I should. I need to get on it. I need to totally get on it.
If you think you're going to get your money back, then hurry up. I mean, you know, what the hell?
I mean, what the hell? Hurry
up.
Yeah,
what the hell?
Yeah.
You know?
So let me ask you.
Yes.
Do blondes have more fun?
I wouldn't know. I'm not even close to a blonde. But people do notice it, you know.
Yeah. What have the responses been?
Most people say it doesn't look bad, or it's okay, or you know, you can barely notice, or something like that. You know,
yeah.
I don't know if they're trying to make me feel good or what.
It's subtle. I mean, it's different, but it's subtle. It's not like, you know.
Well, I'm gonna get my hair cut this weekend, so it'll be a lot shorter, and then it'll grow out
it's
faster.
It's already pretty short.
Yeah.
You're going to come in bald.
No, not really.
That's
not
the cool thing about being being a guy is that you can change your hair and it'd be pretty easy. And.
But that's the thing. There's nothing to change it to, you know? That's what I'm saying. You know, that's what I've been trying to do is do something different with my look and stuff. And Well, maybe apparently there's nowhere to go with that.
Well, maybe you should think about possibly going to see a really good hair dude. Not right. like your typical Fantastic Sam's, but somebody that's right. into hair, and help you maybe if you grew it out. I mean, if you want to clip this off, that's cool. But I mean, like letting it kind of grow out
right.
and then having more like hair to work with.
Right.
And then I know it's your hair is probably thicker.
Yeah.
And then just doing like a different cut or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think your hair looks fine, but maybe yeah. it's just maybe it's just that need for change.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
it like a midlife thing?
It's like, no, I don't know if it's a midlife thing. You see, that's the thing. I don't even think it's about looking younger. It's just about looking
change,
different.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Everybody wants change once in a
yeah,
while.
Yeah. It's like, because it occurs to me that it's the same face looking at me for almost 50 years, you know? We need to change a little bit. But what the hell, you know? I mean, look what happened. When
well,
I
what does Dina think? Does she tell you you look good and sexy, or what does she
no,
say?
No, she wants it gone.
Oh, she wants the hair color
yeah,
gone?
Yeah.
Oh, she does? Okay.
Yeah.
But does she tell you every day, I'm tired of your face, or?
No, not at all. Are you kidding me? No, every day she tells me how hot I am.
Oh, she does?
Yeah. That's, isn't that pretty cool?
That's a sweet wife.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you tell her that she's a hot?
She, you know, we get up in the morning. She checks me out, you know, head to toe, and wow, you know, you look hot.
Oh,
well, that's pretty cool, isn't it?
That's really cool.
That's a nice way to start the day.
She tells you that? That's so sweet.
Yeah, she does. She
actually and do you tell her that she's hot?
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Not as much.
We need to. Women need
I
to hear
should,
it.
Should, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I do tell her how much I love her all the time, and I give her a lot of attention, I think.
That's good.
So that's good. Yeah, you don't have to tell someone they're hot all the time. You know,
you don't, but women
it's
like
the actions.
To,
yeah,
but it is the actions, but women like to. I mean,
they like
got,
to hear it. Huh?
Everybody's got different love language, but I think women like their beauty to be
acknowledged.
Enjoyed and,
yes.
yeah, and celebrated.
I see.
Maybe
okay.
not over every little thing, but I mean, you know, just specifics. Like, oh, your hair or your smile or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I like that top or whatever.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I don't know. I think women, it's different kind of different.
No, it is. It is. But I think both, you know, both sexes like to be complimented and noticed
mm-hmm.
and appreciated.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but I'm so fucking tired this morning. I can't
really?
Even tell you. And I didn't go to sleep that late. I mean, it was probably 11:30, 11:45.
Mm-hmm.
But I just couldn't get up this morning. You know,
really?
It was so tough. And the only thing I can think of when I get out of bed is, when am I going to be able to take a nap? You know, when's
really?
the first chance today that I can take a nap?
Well,
so,
you,
yeah,
do
that's
you have some caffeine? What's going on? What's with your coffee?
Yeah, I've got caffeine. Yeah.
Well, juice
that
it up, man.
Matter.
Yeah, throw it back. Juice it up.
Doesn't make a difference.
No?
No.
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 It's funny. So I'm ready to eat. For those of you guys who haven't known, I've had a stomach virus, which is like a good diet. I don't recommend it, but you do. You just don't eat. You can't eat because you can't hold anything down.
Right.
And last night, Sarah comes home with chicken parmesan from like this really great restaurant called Pinocchio's.
Uh-huh.
And just garlic bread. You know, like that buttered up
yes,
garlic
yes,
bread. And
I know that.
I smelt it in the house. And I knew if I tasted it, I probably would have. It wouldn't have been good. You know,
right.
I would have been like, it would have been bad. Like
yeah, yeah, so you still felt sick last night.
I just feel like I don't want to chance it. It's a weak stomach. It's a weak stomach. I mean, I'm literally, like, I'm having peppermint tea.
Really?
And I'm going, okay, I think we're good. I think I can do peppermint tea. But see, I'm such an eater. I love to eat. It's in my... I could be so sick and be like... Like, I was really sick, and the thought of food made me want to throw up. But it's still in your mind to want to eat. It's
I
still
see.
This idea that you're like, it's going to be time to eat. So I'm ready to have a really big meal or something.
Yeah. You should. Go have a big breakfast after the show.
Oh, I don't think I can do it.
No, huh?
Yeah.
Well, have a small breakfast. Yeah, you got to take it gradually.
Like,
because
I can't really have, like, you don't really want to have dairy. You don't want to have a lot of meat, which that's the best part is meat and dairy, like cheese and meat. I'd love to go to a cheese meat farm and just eat it up.
Yeah.
And you can have bread, which is good, like just but plain, like no seasoning and stuff like that.
Right,
so.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know.
I'll get there. I'll get there, and I'll throw down.
Yeah, and then by tonight, you'll be gorging food all over the place.
Yeah, I think I want to do, like, some kind of... I mean, I love Mexican food, but I'm kind of craving, like, Italian, which is weird. I never really crave Italian food.
Really?
Yeah, I'm more like... I think I was Mexican in, like, a past life.
Oh, you
if
were.
If I believed in that.
Well, that's not too far from from Texas, so
it's not,
it's
but
possible.
I just... I mean, I love enchiladas. I love fajitas. I love guacamole. I love it all. I love cilantro. Yeah. I love pico de gallo. I love peppers.
Yeah. Do you like Mexican people?
Sure, why not? Throw one of them in my taco. I'll eat them up. No, I'm just playing. Yeah, I love people. Yeah, but everyone's different. Everyone's different stuff. I've worked in a lot of kitchens and have gotten to really know a lot of Hispanic, you know, people that work in the kitchen. And,
right.
And also, I mean, clearly I have a lot of, there's tons of, you know, Hispanic people are like, I think the fastest growing populated
population?
Ethnicity, yeah. I think they are.
Yeah, obviously.
So it's not hard to have, like, you know, a friend from, you know, South America or you know, from Mexico or whatever.
Yeah, Mexico is mainly, yeah.
Well, I find that in Texas there's a lot more Mexicans. Out here there's a lot more, like, people from South America, like Guatemala and, you know.
Oh, no. I mean, this
really?
Place is full of people from Mexico, absolutely.
I feel like it's not as much compared to Texas.
Maybe not.
I feel like there's more. I feel like there's Mexicans, but I feel like there's a lot more Guatemalans, people from Nicaragua, people from Venezuela.
Yeah, that too, you know. But, I mean, mm-hmm. they've got a huge community here.
Yeah.
Between here and the border.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in Texas, I mean, the Hispanic community has a really big influence in the culture, like San Antonio, and Mexican food is great there. Just the culture is just, it's a real fun party kind of family culture.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm digging it.
Houston, Texas, huh?
HTX.
Yes.
HTX. Yeah. That's what they say. Mm-mm.
Yeah. So what's going on? What did you do last night?
Well, I actually went to another meet and greet with the artist that I sang backup vocals for in the Persian that Persian artist.
Right.
So those of you guys who remember, I landed a really quick job where I was a backup singer for a Persian artist who plays this instrument called, it's almost like a glorified harp. I can't remember the name of it.
Sitar or something?
It's kind of like a sitar, but it's not.
Okay.
Something like that. And he's really well known in the Persian community. Anyway, we show up and we're doing these backup vocals and we don't know the song. They want us to lip sync. We have never heard the song. And it's televised for Persian New Year on a TV station called Tabash. Tabash is like the number one Persian TV station.
Uh-huh.
And it's seen by, like, I don't remember, like 50 million people or something like that. They've been playing this thing over and over, he told me.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm like on I'm on the television like every day.
Uh-huh.
On the Tabash.
The blondish girl.
The blonde
that
girl.
Doesn't belong here.
Yeah, that's totally not in place. So anyway, we're going to continue doing some work for this guy and we're assembling. He's getting together a really, really big band and lots of dancers, singers, and lots of instrumentalists, and he's going to start doing these really big shows, and he's really well respected in the community and really well known. Of course, I don't know anything, and I don't.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just like,
what
okay,
do you
cool.
Know?
I'll
yeah.
just sing bebop, shaloobop, and you know, and cash a check. But no, really, really nice people, and the music's pretty good actually. It's just a little different.
Yeah.
Like the way they sing and stuff. Like there's a Persian girl there that she's going to be doing some of her own tracks at some of the songs, and I listened to her music, and the way that they vocalize their uh-huh. their runs and their voice are totally different. Like she was like, hi, not like I uh-huh. can't even do it really well. I'd have to practice it, but like
right.
la, 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 I can't even do it. But you know what I'm getting at? Kind
of
like this,
yeah,
like
a lot of ups and downs.
Well, kinda? It's kind of like the way they trill it a bit. It's
yeah.
just a little bit more of that kind of Middle Eastern thing, and I was like, okay, that's why she's good at this.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. So I went and met with them last night. We're going to continue to working together. They're cool. It's just a different kind of culture and, you know, getting used yeah. to it. And
But it's a job doing what you love to do.
It's a job in the field of what I love to do. I don't want right. to, I'm not a backup vocalist. I'm a diva, so.
That's right.
Yeah,
you are.
But I mean, this will pay some bills, okay?
Yeah.
Keep some gas in
you
my core.
You said you were going to bring some of your songs, you know? I mean, people are asking for them. People
we can like play them from we can play them on
MySpace.
On MySpace, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well maybe during the break. You
yeah,
can show
put them
me
on. People
is.
Are asking. Well, let's give the people what they want, Sam.
There you go.
That's yeah, they're rough
about.
Recordings, but they work.
Uh huh.
And I think I'm much better live. And then when I go back into the studio, I'm going to redo those tracks and.
Really, you think you're better live, huh? That's interesting.
I think. I'm better alive.
Well, I don't know. That's what you think. I don't know whether you are.
No, I think it's a whole package because I think that was my first time to ever record in a studio, and you're fighting the clock with time and money, and so I didn't get to go back and really remix a lot of the tracks. The vocals weren't adjusted, and it was just I was just timid.
Right.
I was timid, but the spirit of the music is good, and that's really I think what matters is. When people hear the music, are they moved? Are they into it as opposed to the technicalities? And so I can be really grateful that it was a blessing to be able to do it.
Yeah?
But I'll go back and I'll soup it up.
Yeah, yeah. You got to find some people to collaborate with. Let them pay for everything.
I know. You got to find some investors, huh? I know that's not a novel concept, no. Sam.
Why? People have bands and stuff, but then you may not be the diva, but maybe you will. You know, there's bands looking for lead singers and stuff. I mean, why don't you do that?
I've looked into it. It's a lot harder than it seems. I mean, everybody thinks, why don't you just do this or why don't you just do that? And you start looking down those paths and you start trying them and you start realizing, oh, my gosh, this is a saturated or it's all a bunch of – there's a bunch of people looking for – like you get people that all have their own creative vision and they can't congeal. Like you can have a lot of people that, hey, I play guitar. Hey, I play drums. Hey, I'm a singer. Let's do this. But this guy wants to do metal. This person wants to do soul. This person wants to do pop. And they don't want to bend. And so you're constantly trying to, if you have a creative vision, trying to find people that can add to and help bring that out as opposed to, you know. So it's a lot harder than it seems. I mean, I've definitely looked into it, and I still do from time to time to find the right people to work with. But I think I'm a solo artist, so when the time comes, I'll just hire out the musicians to play the parts.
Right, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And do it like that.
Okay, so what's the next step? What are you going to do with that?
I think the next step is really going out, doing some more live gigs, because that kind of just keeps it fueled, keeps it pumped.
Right.
And then going into the studio and just re-recording.
Right.
I might even start recording on my Mac. I just need to get some of the equipment to do it.
Yeah.
Because I have a great, the Macs are great for recording. I just need to get some like grid microphones and some other things to kind of compress it, and then you can kind of, you're not confined to having to go to the studio and you're fighting the clock with the money thing.
Right.
And maybe kind of doing it that way initially.
Yeah, you can try that.
Yeah, why not? I mean, I've got it.
But, I mean, you need, like, a MIDI keyboard to do, like, all the sounds and everything. Is that what you're going to do?
No. I mean, I think what I would do is I'd play it acoustically.
Right.
I'd plug in my acoustic guitar.
Right.
You know, and play it part for part. And so play the guitar part, then do the vocals, and I do my own backup vocals.
Right.
And just see how much I can do with myself first.
Yeah.
And then maybe get a friend or two in there and have them, you know, or somebody that can really work with the software and add some percussion or whatever.
Yeah.
You know. Stuff like that.
Yeah,
I'm no genius. Oh, really?
Yeah, I used to play with that for a while.
What, like
not professionally or anything?
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I recorded a song or two that way. I had like a MIDI keyboard, so I could create the guitar sounds and the horns and and things like that. The bass, the drums, and it's pretty cool. You know, you kind of put it together.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, I was just gonna play my own stuff and kind of make it. I've actually recorded. An a cappella song of a cover I did on my Mac, and it was rough because see the thing is vocally I blow out the microphone, so I need to get an extra microphone that's a really nice microphone, and it'll allow me to record and sing full voice. So I was in my bathroom to kind of give it that clean, crisp sound, and then I had to have a towel to kind of muffle the louder parts.
Right.
So, I mean, we could play it. I have it on my it's just kind of like it's echoey.
Right.
But it sounds good.
Yeah, it's echoey if you do it in the bathroom, for sure.
Well, it's one of these I'm singing really close and then really far away and then really close and really far away. But it kind of goes with the song, and I've had friends listen to it. They're like, I actually like it.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, it's like pre-recording. You just throw it down and see what you can do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rough cut and stuff,
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun to do,
It is a lot of fun. So, yeah. But I also, I also do comedy, too, and I always have my hand in that. And so it's always like, kind of managing the two.
Yeah.
And then we've got LA Talk Radio.
But you got to, focus on what you want to do, I mean, the singing is one part and the acting or the comedy is another part. And, I mean, it's cool to be able to do both, but I'm one for like focusing on one thing.
Yeah.
Like
and
laser,
most people would agree with you. I used to kind of do that, and I found that, I've really looked at it like, comedy is my heart.
Right.
I mean, sorry, comedy is my personality, and music is my heart.
Uh-huh.
But the reality is kind of seeing where you want to put your effort, and I find that I'm making more headway with comedy.
Really?
Yeah, because it's something that I love doing comedy. It's fun. I feel totally alive, and I feel like it's just such a rush. And it just seems like there's more opportunity to get stage time.
Right.
As opposed to when you're doing music. In L.A., it's different. It's like pay to play. It's the idea that you have to bring X amount of people out to the show to get stage time and sing. And I've done it, and I still do it, but it's a lot higher of a demand. Whereas comedy, I can jump in, I can do my 7 minutes and just keep getting up and keep doing that. And yeah. So, but I mean, I'm not doing them. I'm doing them simultaneously, but sometimes I feel like I just kind of go where the, if I do a gig and I get more gigs from those, I kind of go in that direction and just see it as doors opening. And then I, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I got a couple things I'm working on right now. We'll keep you all posted.
Okay, sounds good. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to an author about a morbid subject of suicide. And but I, you know, I find that very interesting. And he wrote a book on this, and I think you'll find it interesting. We're going to take a little break before that, so stay with us. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Thank you. in the morning. Pick up your phone and jump in on the conversation. Dial 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815 and get in on the fun. Now, let's get back to Sam and Karen in the morning on LA Talk Radio.
You told me once that your older sister committed suicide?
Yeah, she did.
Wow.
Well, it's kind of questionable, but it was like an OD, but it was like 80 pills, so I don't really think that's...
80 pills?
Something like in the 80s. Wow. So I don't think that that's like, hey, I just want to get high.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I have a really crazy... I mean, my family's just so crazy that it's hard to get the straight answer, so I just... You know, there's a big dark cloud over there, but, you know...
Yeah.
But, you know, we're getting through. It's great. Everybody loves a good suicide. No, I'm just playing. It's awful.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm saying.
I mean, how did you deal with it?
I mean, unfortunately, we weren't that close at the time. She lived in a different state. She lived on the East Coast in Virginia and had been through a series of kind of broken relationships. And she had had a baby and was struggling with drugs. And I think that she was going back and forth with giving up her kid. And I think that she decided to give up her child for adoption. And I don't know, wanted visitation rights, something like that. Never got them.
Really?
Yeah. And it was just a struggle.
How terrible is that? Yeah.
And I think that it was at that point, it was like literally like right after they took her kid away that she finished.
Yeah. They would drive you to desperation.
Yeah. It was really hard because I think that, you know, you try to understand and empathize or as best as you can with where was that person in those last moments. And I know that she had went to go live with my mom, who's not the most stable. Mm-hmm. And my mom, you know, she said Christy just wouldn't take his bath. So she bathed her and shaved her legs and just... She just was depressed.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah. Not super, functioning.
Yeah. And then just one day, she just went into her room and she wasn't awake.
Wow.
She just wouldn't wake up. Jeez. And they found out that, you know, of the pills. And I just think, you know, I really don't know. That's one of the songs that I have that is devoted to kind of just wrestling with it and trying to understand without judgment. At the same time, I don't excuse it. I don't think that... like some of the lyrics in my song, it says, you know, we've all thought about it once or twice, to leave this world would be pretty nice, but that's just a convenient idea for the way we feel.
Yeah.
And that we just say that occasionally. Yeah. Or you feel kind of like, man, I'd love to just not be here right now. But
right.
You're not really looking at the long-term effect or the people in your life or the fact that you're not the author of life. And I just think that there's a real violation in taking your own life when... You're not the giver of life.
Yeah.
So it's not really your place to take it.
Yeah, I think it's a very selfish act. You know, I've thought about people that do this, and you know, I mean, I've had times in my life also.
Where, everybody has.
You
I
know,
mean, I've
and,
definitely.
And I thought it's a very selfish act. The reason we're talking about suicide is because we're going to review the book Legend of a Suicide by David Vann. So let's give him a call and find out exactly what this book is about. And a rather serious topic, but interesting nevertheless.
Hello?
Good morning. Is this David?
Yeah.
David, good morning to you. This is Sam and Kara
calling
you
from
David.
L.A.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Good. Are you alive?
Yeah.
You're alive. You're alive to tell about it. Where are we calling you? What part of the country are you in?
I'm in Fremont, near San Francisco.
Oh, I see. Okay, so you're in the same time zone, at least, as we are.
Yeah, that's easy.
Yeah. you wrote the book Legend of a Suicide, and I had a chance to take a glance at it. I didn't really get to read it, but it seems like a pretty profound book, and it's sort of a memoir, right, for you?
Yeah, it's fiction, but it has true stories in the background. My father killed himself when I was 13, and for 3 years afterward, I told everyone that he had died of cancer.
Oh, wow.
And then years later, I started writing about his story, and I worked on the book for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And for the first 3 or 4 years, I threw everything away, but after that, I found ways to tell his story indirectly.
Right.
So that I don't tell actually what happened. I try to find something in fiction that's truer to who he was and what was going on. And the whole book is set in Alaska, where I grew up as a kid and where I was born. So that's a lot of how the book works, too, is the description of that Alaskan rainforest that was kind of mythical for me as a kid.
Right. Now, when you were 13, did you understand what was going on, what happened? I mean, you knew it was suicide.
No.
No, you didn't?
Yeah, I didn't. I think all of us knew that something was wrong and had some idea of where he was headed, but we didn't really know why. So the book tries to explore what essentially was a mystery. I wasn't sure why he had killed himself and why he didn't see other options for his life. And I also didn't know why it wasn't enough for him that my sister and I loved him. It seemed like that should have been enough for him to stick around. So it was a confused time for a long time after his suicide. I think it's a long and difficult legacy for anyone who goes through it. There's all the anger and guilt and shame and all that kind of stuff. But over time, it actually was possible to write these stories that are not so raw. They're transformed. For instance, my dad asked me to come live with him for a year in Alaska, and I said no, and then 2 weeks later he killed himself. So I felt tremendously guilty, and I wondered if I'd said yes and gone up there, would he still be alive?
Right.
And so in the book, there's a long story where the boy and his father go homesteading for a year in Alaska. So the boy says yes. The boy goes up and spends a year with him. And that's the kind of transformation that happens in the book.
I see.
It takes the stuff of real life, but then changes it.
Is this kind of like taking an alternative route through these stories that you weren't able to do at that age, in a way, to kind of explore it?
Yeah, it explores all the different options, and it also tells different versions of his story and what might have happened, because in my family, we all had different ways that we explained to ourselves who he was and why he did what he did. Everyone had a different story. None of the stories matched up.
Interesting.
So that was tremendously confusing in real life. And in the book, those stories all kind of compete with each other.
Right. So I would imagine, I mean, you must feel like a great sense of responsibility and, like you said, guilt, you know, because, and I think as a young kid, like you said, you feel that maybe it's not enough. Maybe I'm not enough for them. And, you know, so
yeah.
I think that would hurt your self-esteem quite a bit.
Yeah, it's terrible, of course, for anyone, I think. And it has these really long legacies. For 20 years after he killed himself, I felt afraid that if I got to the point where I my life had gone badly enough and I hit a low enough point, maybe suicide would become an option for me too.
Right.
There was this real sense of doom, a really palpable sense of doom. And it took hitting a low point 20 years later to realize that I wasn't interested in killing myself and I just wasn't going to go there.
That's
and
good.
That was great. So even though I hit a low point in my life, it ended up being kind of a high point because I felt freed from that legacy finally.
It's so interesting to hear what you're saying, not to interject too much, but I lost my sister. She took her life as well. And I have some of the similar things. Like, I kind of feel like I'm going to get another phone call one day, and it's going to be like someone else in my family, like a weird kind of.
Right.
Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's, I don't know, it's one of those things that you just don't, you can't really describe, but I feel like it's coming now. It's coming. It's like almost like this disease, and someone else is going to do it, or something weird. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like a ticker.
Yeah,
it's
weird. I think it opens up that possibility in a way, whereas in a family that hasn't experienced it, maybe it's not possible. Luckily, suicide is actually pretty preventable. 80 to 90% of people who are diagnosed as depressed in some way respond positively to treatment. I mean, mostly the people have a lot of warning signs and depression for quite a while before killing themselves. So I actually work now for the National Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and there's a lot of good work they do, and I think that it's something that could, you know, we could have less of it if everyone was sort of more responsive, I think.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, I would imagine that left a lot of, well, you said obviously a lot of hurt, probably some devastation in the family. Do you believe that this goes this is like a family thing? I mean, does this go around in families?
I think it does to some degree in that once it's happened in the family, as we just mentioned, I think maybe it becomes a possibility. And I think that depression can run a bit in families also.
Right.
But it hits pretty generally across the population. There are 33,000 suicides a year in the U.S., so a lot of people are affected from pretty much everyone, you know, different types of people and different backgrounds. So it's something that I think the more that depression can be sort of recognized and treated and going to a therapist, thinking about more suicide can be addressed and the rate can go down, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. And so I mean the sense of I think probably, you see, when I think of suicide, you know, because I've thought about the topic and, you know, of doing away with myself a couple times, but I always realize that this is a very selfish act because, you're solving your own problems, but you're creating so many new ones for the people that love you.
Yeah, I think that there's a guy, Thomas Joyner, has a couple books on suicide, a professor at Florida that I know, and he maintains that suicide's not a selfish act, that actually the person who gets to that point of suicide is suffering so much they've stopped being able to think in that way, and sometimes they can actually have fantasies that they're helping other people out, like with the life insurance or something. My dad had some sense of that, I think.
Right.
But I think it's important to recognize the person who's thinking about suicide is really suffering, and what I wish that people could recognize when they get to that point is that there are always options. There are always ways to transform your life and become something else. Right. My dad really didn't like being a dentist, but he could have done a different job,
you know, and
a couple of relationships hadn't worked out, but that didn't mean he was doomed for the rest of his life. So I've been amazed in my own life at how reshapable a life is, how you can hit ruin and lose everything and then find out there's something else you can do. So I would hope that people would just see that possibility when they get to that.
And it's probably unfair, you know, because when I think about this, because we don't really know what went on in their mind during this time, but I mean, I can totally understand if someone's like, God, I'm so miserable. People probably can't stand being around me. I would help them if I just went away, and and that's the kind of thinking. So it's hard to judge them when they're in that state of mind.
Yeah, I think so. And Legend of a Suicide in my book is just an attempt to get closer to my father to try to understand his despair that led to that suicide. But it's also, I don't think of it just as therapy or just about suicide. I also tried to take what was ugliest in my life and transform it into something beautiful. And I hope that the stories are a pleasure to read and beautiful and set in that wild landscape in Alaska. You know, it's this really mythical place that I grew up as a kid. I imagined wolves and bears were chasing me in the forest, and we really had wolves and bears.
Uh-huh.
And my grandfather caught a halibut over 250 pounds, and my first salmon was taller than I was, and, you know, over 200 inches of rain in that rainforest each year, and it had like a false second floor from all the debris that fell that you could actually fall through as a kid and disappear, and it's just such a wonderful place.
Right.
That I try to have it not be, you know, a drag to read the book that it's just about suicide.
Yeah.
It's called Legend of a Suicide because it offers a portrait of my father's suicide and his despair and all that, but it's really a portrait of Alaska too, and of how kind of magical that place is.
I was going to ask you, David, I was going to ask you about the backdrop being Alaska and going back to the story of your father and then maybe correlating to the book, how much of the atmosphere of Alaska, just the rain and the isolation that can come living in remote areas. I mean, do you feel like that played a part, or what part did you feel like it did play?
In real life, he killed himself on the Ides of March, March 15th, 1980, in Fairbanks, Alaska, where it was like 60 below, and he was isolated. He had built a new house with no furniture, not living with anyone, miles away from other neighbors, and the intense isolation that he felt was certainly increased by the landscape, by that particular place. In my writing, I try to use Alaska. I find Alaska so beautiful and so grand.
Yeah, it is beautiful.
I think that isolation is useful for talking about what's going inside the characters.
Right. Mm. Yeah. So now my question is why you love Alaska so much, obviously. How come you didn't stay? What are you doing in Fremont now?
It's just jobs. I'm a professor at University of San Francisco, which is a great job, and I really love it. And I actually applied for a job up in Fairbanks, but the job just wasn't as good. So
yeah.
I thought about going to Alaska at various times. I went back this summer. I go back most summers, and I still go fishing there, and I really love that place. But it's a little tougher to get a job
right.
in my field there.
Right. So I would imagine you've worked out all the implications and the effects on you over the years. I would imagine the book was probably cathartic and helped you sort of relate to this. Does this still weigh heavily on you? I mean, obviously you still, to this day, since you were 13, it's still on your mind. You write a book about it. You talk about it. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, suicide has affected your life profoundly. You know?
Yeah, absolutely, and it'll never go away. The debilitating parts of the suicide, the fear and anger and shame and guilt, those did drop away over time, which is really nice. But what remains really is my sense of love for him. Especially when I'm surprised into thinking about him, if I see a photo or something, I still really feel this love for him that's so strong, and that, like when I was 13, and that's amazing to me that that's the one part that doesn't fall away, and that seems like a kind of wonderful gift. And it's also great to have this book coming out. It's now coming out in 8 languages in over 50 countries, and it's Chris Maloney from Law & Order has bought the film rights for it, and it's currently a New Yorker Book Club selection, and it's just taking off in this fantastic way, and I'm just thrilled and so grateful for that, because I worked on it for 10 years, and then for 12 years, no one would even send it out.
Oh,
agents
really?
Wouldn't even send it to editors.
Really?
Because it had suicide in the title, and they just thought, who would want to read that? But now it's a national bestseller in France, and it's taken off, and I feel so lucky, and it feels like such an amazing second chance.
Yeah,
wow.
That's absolutely amazing. Congratulations.
Talk about something bad going
Thanks.
Good, you know?
Yeah.
Like a really redemptive story of just how, you know, dealing with that loss and bringing something good out of it.
Now, I would imagine.
And I just wish he had seen that in his own life, you know. I wish he had seen that he could have reshaped his life, too, and that redemption was possible for him also.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, did you go through a stage of anger at him for.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, years of rage.
Right.
Nothing less, you know.
Right.
I mean, I think everyone feels that from a suicide, just rage at, you know, how could you do this to all of us? And how could you leave us? And, you know, why didn't you love me? And all those sorts of things. I mean, I was so incredibly angry at him for so long.
Right.
But finally that does fall away. It takes a long time for it to fall away, like decades, but, you know, it finally does.
Yeah.
So do you have a family of your own today?
I'm married, and I've been with my wife for 12 years, and I'm really happy about that, because I'd always been afraid of marriage, because that was the first step in my dad's life toward his suicide, really, because he was unhappy with his marriage, and he ended up breaking up 2 marriages through being unfaithful, and that was a big part of his guilt and his despair. So I think I was kind of hesitant to get married because of that, and it turns out it's been great. I don't have kids yet. We're still thinking about that, but so far, so good.
Yeah,
that's
wonderful.
Awesome.
Well, congratulations. We're talking to David Vann. The book is Legend of a Suicide. And doesn't it say something that you won an award there?
Yeah, it says it's a notable book, the New York Times Book Review of the Year.
Yeah, that's amazing.
He also, the San Francisco Chronicle, it says, Vann looks into the dark and isolated heart of the American soul. It is a devastating journey, impossible to put down and equally impossible to forget.
Amazing.
So that's a great.
Thanks.
Yeah. So it must feel, and I know books take a long time to write and stuff. So when you finally get some recognition, there's nothing like it, I would imagine.
Yeah, I'm really happy about it. And I'm actually giving a reading in L.A. at Skylight Books on April 30th. So I'll be down there in the area. Skylight Books, April 30th. And then there's more info on my website at davidvann.com.
David Vann.
V-A-N-N.
Right. And the book is available everywhere, I would imagine. And again, Legend of a Suicide, David Vann. David, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, David, for sharing. Really
appreciate
it. Yeah,
thank you. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Congratulations on the book and all the best to you.
Thanks, you too.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you. Well, there you go. You know, I mean, something, like you said, something good turning out of tragedy, you know?
I know. That's such a rough subject.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is.
I like his approach, though. I mean, I think that's so cathartic to really... You know, go to dark places and try to not stay in the dark place, but go through it and try to find light on the other end of it. Yeah. I think that that's really paramount to healing and really just it's a real contagious effect.
Too. Yeah. I think you can't really comprehend the desperation that must be there, you know, in order to for someone to take such drastic step, you know.
A friend of mine that I grew up with, her mom took her life, and she was suffering from an illness, but it wasn't something that the doctors could detect.
Right.
So they didn't know if it was psychological or not, but in her mind, she just, I mean, she was so weak, and she was in a lot of pain, and it took her own life. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of there, and I'm seeing my friend and how she's dealt with it. I mean, there's a lot of different stages to it, and it's such a loss.
Yeah.
And it's, and I know for me with my sister, I mean, I wasn't as angry because I didn't feel like she did it to me.
Right.
And I didn't feel like it had to do with me, but I did feel a sense of hurt because I felt like it's preventable. Like, I feel like that kind of death is something that if they were loved, or, I mean, not that they weren't loved, but if there was a certain kind of intervention, of which I don't know, that would that have really changed the outcome? And you can only go down that path so far. I've already played that card a lot because I try not to do that now because it'll drive you crazy. Like, what if I did this? What if I did that? What if I did this? It doesn't...
Right.
You're never going to get an answer, and what's done is done.
Right.
So, but there was a specific moment when I went to visit my mom, who I'm not very close with, and I remember I was it was for Thanksgiving, and I was going to pass my sister's exit on the freeway, and I remember just distinctly not wanting to go see her because of her living conditions and the guy that she was with, and I remember thinking, like, I just don't know what I'm getting into, and I didn't want to see her in a certain light, and so I didn't go.
Right.
And I mean, that kills me.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
A lot of guilt there.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of patched it up. I mean, she told me that it hurt her feelings, and I apologized to her, and we kind of kept in touch and stuff. But I mean, that really is one of those things where I was like, oh my gosh, what if I'd have, you know, gone and seen her, and who knows what seed it would have planted.
Yeah, exactly.
But the reality is I didn't.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, some people's problems are way above your pay grade, too.
Right, yeah.
I kind of look at it like that. Like, sometimes that's why I really believe in God, and I really believe in the Holy Spirit, and knowing that there's places that only God can go in people's hearts.
Right.
And there's only a certain depth of pain that human to human can't reach.
Right. So you're saying there's a little kind of a disconnect from God when someone gets to that point?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no way. There's absolutely. You're totally. Not that God's not there, but you're totally inward, and you're not looking upward, and you're not looking for God because you're so overwhelmed with your situation. I can relate in just some dark times that I've had. Clearly, I'm living. I've never gotten to that place. But I've been in places where I just only see the problem.
Right.
And I only see the word no, and it can't happen, and I don't have the resources or whatever the situation is.
Right.
And I just feel overwhelmed by my circumstance, and I don't want to do it. I don't want to fight it anymore. I don't want to pray anymore. I don't want to believe anymore. I don't want to do anything. I just want to not be here, basically.
Yeah.
And that's not a novel feeling. There's many people have felt that way.
Right.
But in those moments, I realize that when I get to that really dark place, it's because I'm, what I'm not doing those moments is I'm really, or I have an opportunity sometimes, and I do, and sometimes I don't, which is really turn my focus in my heart and in my brain towards God and God's truth, and really looking at the giver of life, the author of life, and looking at the bigger purpose, because I think that our problems that feel so big are really tiny in the big picture.
Yeah.
In the big picture, because like David's saying, he said, we're going to live many lives on this earth. We're gonna hit rock bottom, and there's gonna be the opportunity to transform and to change and renew and start again. And I mean, you just look at the seasons that God started. You know, fall, and then the spring, the spring is new life, and then winter's death, and there's a rebirth. And I think, you know, there's always possibility.
Right.
There's always possibility. And when I get to those dark places, you know, I've been to a few of them that have been hard, and I've thought, well, if I feel this bad, if I'm this down and it's this dark, I could use my life that had not, that in a way that has nothing to do with me for someone else. And I thought, okay, well then if worse comes to worse, I'm going to go to some mission field somewhere and I'm going to scoop up porridge and put it in someone's bowl, or I'm going to go build a house for somebody, or I'm going to go feed the poor. Like, at the end of the day, if my life sucks this bad because it's so inward, then right. I need to do something outward.
I see.
And okay. It makes me think, well, if I have to abandon my dreams and have to abandon everything to just have my physical body be used for good on this earth,
right.
Then do that.
Uh-huh.
Because we've all been given life, and regardless whether or not we've been born into a good family, money or opportunity, I mean, life is a gift.
Yeah.
I mean, rich people commit suicide.
Right.
Poor people commit suicide.
Yeah,
I mean,
because it doesn't have to do really with how much money you have.
No, it doesn't. And that's the thing.
With, you know, I think the bottom line is people need to feel a certain, desire to live, you know.
Purpose.
This enjoyment of life. And mm-hmm. I think, but... You know, we also have to understand that many people are born without that ability, you know. I mean, whatever chemical imbalance in the brain, whatever it is, circumstances, you know,
uh-huh.
in your childhood and all that, you know, people can get that desperate.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think it could be, I don't write any of those possibilities off. It could be clinical, it could be...
Yeah.
Circumstantial, it could be, you know, environmental.
I mean, 33,000 suicides a year, he said, in the mm-hmm. United States. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
It really, really is.
All deaths that could be prevented.
I know, isn't it just weird?
Yeah, that's why, you know, you don't want to ignore the signs, I think, if there's someone in the family, you know. And I think if they threaten, you should take it seriously. We have a phone call.
Okay.
Let's see who that is. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Can I be entertained today? I don't tune into the show to listen to this squalor and woe
Greg?
Is me and my life sucks. Entertain me, goddammit.
Well, sorry about that, Greg.
Greg, what do you have to say? I know it's coming.
Yeah, you want... Well, no, he wants entertainment.
I don't have anything
He's
to say.
Right.
I'm listening live. I don't get a chance to do it all the time.
Right.
And I tune in today, and this is what I get. I mean, come on.
I know it's a little bleak. Hey, listen.
Let's bust out the titties and lesbian sex jokes.
Listen, Greg. I don't choose the authors, but this does look like a good book. We went with it. You know, we're pointing at sometimes.
And you got to take some. Serious things here sometimes. I understand what you're saying, Greg. But, you know, some things interest me, and I find this to be morbidly fascinating. What can I tell you, you know? So if
Do you find it fascinating about people that want to kill themselves?
I do, because not...
Don't you think we should just encourage them to get it done so we don't have to be around them anymore?
There
oh,
you
man.
Go. Now, that's one way to look at it.
That's
yeah.
rough.
Yeah.
That's right. You know what? Wait, you know,
no
if you're
mercy.
Not happy, I'm not happy. Do
yeah.
it.
For realsies. I mean, if you're dark and depressed or whatever and you want to do it, just do it. But don't puss out and cut your veins. You know, eat a shotgun. Do it like a man.
Eat a shotgun?
Yeah.
That's awful,
but that leaves a big
it's
miss.
It's not awful. Why?
Because you know what? What if...
Wah. My life sucks.
Listen,
oh
let's
God.
Talk about something more
over?
Important.
How about making it better and shutting the fuck up? How
okay.
about that?
Sounds hey. Good. Now, Greg, Carol was wondering what your show is about. We were talking about the barbecue show yesterday, and she said...
Listen, oh, I'm going to tell. He's trying to... Listen, here's the thing. Greg, you know, I love you. Listen, I tuned in.
You don't even know me.
I know, whatever. We're going with it, okay? Listen, Greg, here's the deal. I listened to the show, and this is what I said, because Sam, he goes, what'd you think? And I said, listen, it's boring. But this is my point. If you're not into barbecue...
Wait,
it's boring.
What did you listen to?
I listened to barbecue. Here's my thing. It's so specific to barbecue that if you're not into barbecue, you can't enjoy it, right?
Yeah.
I think Greg would be
the
first one.
I don't
market the show to like the masses. I fully understand that I am catering a niche. There's nobody else doing what I do.
On the other hand,
a subculture.
on the other hand, I did recommend the show to people who I know that are barbecue people that have businesses and stuff like that do barbecue. So
right.
I turned other people onto it. But I was thinking I didn't know exactly what I was getting into. I knew it was like barbecue-ish. I just didn't know it was straight. I mean, he gets straight up into barbecue hardcore, the nuts and the bolts and the butt and the thighs and the
and
noses.
And there's people that are into
and
they, it.
And they're talking for hours about like, you know, ham hocks and marinades and I mean, it's intense science. Yeah. How did you get into this?
For instance, last night I finished up a four-week run of what I call the barbecue roundtable, where I moderate a show, and I brought on, for instance, last night I brought on three of the top brisket cooks in the competition circuit in the country. And that's all we talk about. We start at the top of the hour, and for the whole hour, we talk about how do you prepare the brisket for the cooker,
right.
And then how do you cook it when it's in the cooker, and then what do you do when you go to turn it in for competition? And it for somebody that has no interest in that, you probably do want to kill yourself at that point.
Yeah,
but that being said, for all the people that find it interesting, I had the highest listenership that I've ever had last night because of the people that were coming in to talk about it, and people that are in the subculture want to better their product. And I'm certainly under no misconception for the fact that somebody like yourself that's not into it, you would hate it.
Playing.
Of course you would.
I was totally playing too, and then I was like, oh, it's going to get back to Greg, and he's going to think I'm dissing him. But no, it's the fact
not
that
not at all.
No.
I mean, he understands it, isn't it? You know, and not everybody's into it, obviously, but the people that are into it are very passionate about
it. Well, here's the thing: it's informative. I mean, it's a heck of information. I mean, you guys are hardcore information central.
Yeah.
Up on the BBQ.
That's what it's all about. I mean, the one thing about the internet is the fact that the internet caters to so many niches. I mean, look, TJ McCormick's show is so stupid, and he's such a blowhard, and I hate his guts.
No,
there's a lot of people that really like that guy, so what can you do?
Do you really not like his show?
Yeah, tell us what you really think.
I'm kidding. That was a joke.
Of course. He loves TJ.
Oh, okay, because I think he's funny, man.
Yeah. Believe me, there's a wall of fame, or what do we call it? What do we call ourselves, Sam?
The wall of
the Mount
fame.
Rushmore of LA talk radio. I actually still call it the Mount Rushmore of BBS talk radio, but that's a different story for a different day. But you know, me, Sam, and Johnny, and TJ, and the Broads from Broad Topics. It's all this is the kind of the core group that started Dr. Michelle and
Lucia,
I mean, I love those guys just because we kind of built this thing up. And if you look around, a lot of shows have come on, a lot of shows have left. But 2 years later, we're still here building an audience and catering to our specific...
Yeah.
You know, Johnny's serving a left wing, TJ's serving a right wing, Sam is serving the perverse.
Right.
And I'm serving the people that like to eat meat and get fat.
Listen, hey, so...
And she likes to eat meat, right?
Oh, man, I do.
Yeah.
I bet you do, man.
Yeah. you just wait and see how she turns out to be like the biggest barbecuer ever, you know?
No, I love cooking. See? The thing is, I love cooking. And I love food, but I didn't realize that when I went barbecue, I was like, oh, I'll give it a whirl. I was like, oh, man, this is way above my pay grade. It's just, you know what I mean? It's like intense. They're like, yeah, and the ligament here, and toast that ligament and friggin' saute that shit, and then wrap it right back up and put it under your Christmas tree for 5 days, and then brisket it up and put it in the microwave. Yeah, I couldn't.
Now, if you love to cook, then barbecue is right up your alley because it is a long process, and there's steps to take, and it's really the journey, and the product that you get at the end is so tasty and just kind of primal and all that great stuff. You would love it if you gave it a shot, I think. Yeah.
Listen, what's your favorite thing of barbecue to eat?
When it's prepared well, the best thing barbecue to eat is a beef brisket.
Oh.
But I'm probably like 85 or 90% of the consuming public out there. I love a very good barbecued rib as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Ribs are good.
I gotta get my dad to get on your show because that's what he does. He has a big barbecue. Well, he has all barbecue company that caters, and they do. They've got this little sandwich shop in the middle of this freaking rinky-dink town called Baycliff, Texas. I'm serious. It's right next to a trailer.
Uh-huh.
They have there's a trailer, like you know, trailer park,
right.
And there's this little garage converted into a barbecue shop, and he's kicking ass.
Really?
It's just he's kicking ass.
The most popular barbecue places in America are little mom and pop shops that you'd probably drive past if you weren't giving them a second thought, but they're the ones that legends are built, and they do very well. They do a good carry out, and then of course the name grows and people want them to come to their house to cater, and I'm sure he's getting
kinda,
some of that.
It's kind of like that, and he's got a bunch of smokers in the back, and he's always got some brisket going or something like that. And
believe me, it's rare for me to hear a woman say the word barbecue and actually know that there's a difference between the word barbecue and the word grilling.
Right.
So
that,
to me, is a big attraction, so we might have to get married.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, aren't you a little married up with kids,
right? He's available. Yeah, but, you know, for barbecue,
yeah, but come on, I'm part Mormon.
Yeah.
What state are you in again? I forgot. You're in Michigan?
Cleveland, Ohio, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay. Ohio. How is Ohio right now? Is it nice?
Well, today it's fantastic. It's 65 degrees and wall-to-wall sunshine.
So let me ask, how did you guys get linked up? I mean, Ohio, LA Talk Radio, how did that work?
Well, it works. You know, it's destiny. What can I tell you?
But how did y'all meet?
Yeah. Through the internet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Craigslist.
Craigslist is good.
Honest to God, I had Googled internet talk radio, and Sam was running an ad in Craigslist.
Uh-huh.
So I dropped him a note, and that's how it got started.
Listen,
love at first sight.
Listen, I'm on here because of Craigslist, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Craigslist is a flea market. You know, there's some diamonds in the rough.
Yeah.
You just got to dig and dig and dig. I've gotten some pretty good gigs out of Craigslist, but I've also gone to some crazy stuff, too. Like, you know, we need a party hostess, and I get there, and it's like, so here's how the game works, okay? You just roll the dice, and then you pick the number, and then you do a lap dance, and I was like, what? And I left.
Yeah.
It's not my thing.
Well, yeah. Well, Greg, listen, thanks so much for calling in, man. You know we love you. And Greg has Barbecue Central every Tuesday at 6 o'clock p.m.
Can I call in? Your show.
Yeah, call into his show.
I'm gonna give him hell.
Why not?
I don't want to jack.
Believe me,
I don't want to jack.
I produce and engineer my own show, so if I feel like you're getting the best of me, I can easily hang up on you, and then I can talk crap behind you because you won't be on the line anymore.
Yeah. That's okay. I'll get you back.
There you go. You see?
I think I'm gonna call you in and be like, yeah. So how do I make this macaroni and cheese? How do I do this? How's the pan?
Go ahead, try your luck, sister. See how that works out.
Hey there, little sister. Maybe I'm gonna have to do that and give you a little cow on your barbecue show. You just
there
watch
you
out.
All right, Sam. As always, I appreciate you taking my call and have a great rest of your show.
Thank
Bye,
you, Greg. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That's Greg Rempe, of course. Yeah. And he's right. I mean, he's been with us from the beginning. And,
he seems fun.
It was great.
I would go to a barbecue. Let me rephrase this. If Greg was throwing a barbecue, I'd freaking be there.
You definitely want to go.
Yeah, I'd want to go.
Definitely.
Maybe not.
He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
But that's the nice thing is that, you know, I mean, look, I'm not into barbecue. I don't listen to the shows. Sometimes I do because he really produces it well, you know?
It
sounds very professional and stuff. But nevertheless, that's what the internet's about. It's about niches. It's about targeting small groups, you know, because everything is fragmented now on the internet, you know?
Yeah.
In the marketplace. People are, you know, for music, they go to different places. It's not just radio anymore, you know? So the same thing with news, with different topics. But it's amazing that people are so passionate about.
It's such an interesting niche, and they were, like, dissecting it hardcore. I was like, wow, I couldn't get into it because I just didn't know enough.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't even know what we're talking about. Is this still food?
Yeah.
Are we still talking about food? When do we eat? That's what I felt like, yeah. But I'm gonna have to call in and give him some craziness.
Yeah.
I'm shaking in my brisket boots right now.
Yeah.
Shaking in my barbecue boots.
Oh, I'm hungry now, man.
I'm freaking hungry.
Yeah.
I'm ready to eat.
Do you like ribs?
I can go for some ribs.
Baby back ribs.
Yeah,
and stuff like
I
that.
Could go for some ribs.
Tony Roma's is a very good place for ribs if you ever want.
Really?
To try some, yeah.
I bet Greg doesn't like them.
Yeah, like you said, mom and pop are pretty good too. But you know, I only know some in the area.
They've got good ribs.
Very good ribs.
Mm-hmm.
They specialize in that, yeah. Okay, well, before we take a break, I want to wish my sister-in-law a happy birthday.
Yay!
Her name's Lilu, and she's the mother of the baby that I always talk about.
Aww.
The one-year-old, who's Abigail. So I want to wish you, Lilu, a very, very happy birthday. We love you. And I don't know how old she is, but much younger than me, I can tell you that. So, congratulations to you. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back right after this.
On your computer, on your Wi-Fi radio, on your iPhone, commercial-free original talk, only on LA Talk Radio, your favorite talk station.
I've been
back. Let's get back to Sam and Kara in the morning. Kara in the morning. Right here on LA Talk Radio.
Although it sounds like European trash music anyway.
That's funny.
That's a joke on us. So did you hear that Jesse James, the poor little guy, has checked into treatment? And
for cheating on his wife, is there a treatment for that?
Yeah,
I guess there is.
I think there is, yeah. He's probably going to call it sex addiction, right? That's pretty much what everybody calls it these days. But I think they didn't specify, but he is seeking professional help. So they're saying Jesse checked himself into a treatment facility to deal with personal issues. He realized that this time was crucial to help himself, help his family, and help save his marriage. So that's what his agent says. And so they're saying that it was his idea to go in. It's not like sending.
Yeah, that's a hard one to come back from, you know? I mean, yeah. On top of that, your life's public.
Right.
There's no dealing with this kind of behind closed doors and no one knows. I mean, people know.
Yeah, they're in a glass house, you know?
Yeah.
When you're that famous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just he doesn't get to just run off and have like a time to recoup and deal with this. It's like everybody knows, everybody sees him now, and I think he's probably more famous than ever.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean,
I never even heard of him until now.
I mean, I know that he was kind of an extreme sports kind of guy and into cars and stuff like that, but I mean, I'm not that big. I don't really know.
Right.
But I know that he's huge in his field, and he endorses a lot of products, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so now they're saying four different women claim to have had affairs with him. Four different women, you know? So
I mean, come on, guys. Listen, celebrity men that are married, learn your lesson. There's just, you can't get away with it. These women are going to trap you.
Yeah.
This is also a business ploy, I think, on some women's parts.
You think, huh?
Well, I think it's fun and it's flirty and it's like, oh my gosh, look at this, you know?
Yeah.
But I also have to say, they're opportunists. They're opportunists. Yeah. They're going to see, then four more come out, you know?
Right.
So, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Zip it up is what you're going to do.
Yeah?
Zip it up.
Yeah, either that or, you know, suffer the consequences, I suppose, you know? Sandra Bullock has moved out of the family home. So, she took the kids and moved. Does she have kids, though?
Wait a second. I don't think they're her kids.
Oh, they're not? Mm-mm. Oh, yeah, it's his kids, and she doesn't want to adopt them. That's what it is.
She doesn't want to?
Right. He's got three kids.
What do you mean she doesn't want to adopt them?
She doesn't want to adopt them. I guess maybe they were like preparing for her to adopt them or something, you know?
Yeah.
And she decided not to.
So, yeah, it's saying that it might be under sex addiction. Yeah, this is kind of intense stuff. We'll see about that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen the pictures of the girl that he has had an affair with.
Oh, but they were talking about her, like being old. Is she like old tattooed with Nazi insignia and stuff?
I don't get it because there's a picture of him too with the high Hitler thing and the Nazi type hat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where are you looking?
Yeah, it's TMZ actually.
Oh, okay.
And she has swastikas on her arm. I'm just, when did becoming like a Nazi fetish? When was that cute? Are you supposed to be cute or something?
Apparently some people are into that. What can I say?
Apparently into what? Into what is there to be into? Like
I don't know, into chicks that look like Nazis. I don't know what the fuck, you know?
I just think it's another example of people like taking something that's good, like sex is good and it's loving and it's beautiful, and it's like I've got a knife in my mouth with a fucking swastika on my arm and I'm like, yeah, come have sex with hell.
Yeah.
Have sex with demons, it's hot. You know,
people get into all kinds of shit. I mean, sex makes people do the craziest fucking things, you know?
To me, I'm thinking their sex must suck, is what I think. I think if you've got to go to knives and, like, swastikas, and you've got to go to, like, have sex in hell, if you've got to go to that side, you've probably got to go to such lengths to achieve an orgasm and to actually feel any kind of satisfaction.
Right.
That's got to be a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, versus just being nervous and giggly around somebody and, you know, being able to like touch the person and be like, oh, and like there's excitement there just because you're holding hands.
I mean,
people don't even feel that anymore.
Well,
I mean, I'm not saying it stays there. Right. I know you have to do maintenance and stuff, but I'm just saying a sense of like just the fact that there's a natural element to it.
Right.
And just really loving your partner.
Yeah, it's a different feeling. I mean, you know, obviously someone who's pretty, you know, there's something wrong with them if they're into that kind of stuff, you know.
I don't get it.
Nazi sex.
I don't
whatever.
Get it. Like, and if did she, I guess she didn't know that about her husband, that he like has the picture with the Nazi thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I'm sure she didn't know a lot of things about him.
I don't know. That's just crazy stuff.
Sandra Bullock.
I don't know.
What are you going to do? Now, the National Enquirer says that Jessica Simpson is unhappy about her curves, and she's jealous of her younger sister Ashley's.
What?
Super slender figure.
I don't believe that, because she just came out with The Price of Beauty, which I think is doing pretty well.
Yeah.
And she has reported saying that she just wants to enjoy life and be healthy, and it's not about being super skinny. And that she said that just stuff isn't a way to live. I mean, she did it for certain roles. She did it for certain characters, but that she can't maintain it. It's not livable if it's not your natural body weight.
Yeah.
I mean, she says the biggest she's ever been is a size 6. A size 6 is small.
Right.
It's a nice, healthy small.
Right.
It's not super skinny, but it's still petite.
Right.
Okay? So if your bigger size is a size 6, you're doing just fine.
Right.
I'm not going to shed any tears. I had a really good friend of mine, a roommate, and like she'd pork up once in a while, put on a good 10 or 15 pounds once in a while. She looked awesome with it on. She had a great butt. She had legs, looked really muscular. She was tiny waist. You know, just she's just a gorgeous girl.
Right.
And she'd be like, I'm so fat. I'm so fat. I'm like, I'm sorry, but if this is you fat, get out of my face.
Yeah.
I will show you fat. I'll put on 10 or 15 and I won't look recognizable. It used to piss me off. I'm like, ladies, if this is your fat, get out of my way. If this is your fattest weight, get out of my way.
Yeah. Because
if I put on a 10 or 15, because I always like ride the cusp. I'm always on the line. I'm like really built. I'm very voluptuous, but I'm at that point.
Yeah.
That if I add 10 pounds, it's going to go into fat girl mode.
Right.
But if I just maintain, it looks hot.
Yeah. So
I'm telling you.
It's just like you're right there, right?
I'm right at that point.
You let yourself go a little bit.
Yeah. I have to stay this place. I have to stay right where I am. But if I pack on the 10 pounds, which isn't inevitable because I do it once in a while, you know, I look porky. If I lose it, it looks really hot and curvy.
Now, are you, you know, there's been like a debate and stuff about this. Do you think that women that are fat should embrace their look, or do you think they should look in the mirror and say, you know what, I should lose some weight?
I think it's kind of both, to be honest. I think that there's a part of women that is taught through culture and through just society that, you know, there's like a lot of self-hate.
Right.
And I think people that are trying to change anything about themselves, hating yourself is never going to help.
Right.
I mean, sitting and looking at your imperfections or looking at things that you don't like, whether that's internally or external, I mean, hating yourself is counterproductive. It's it's not fruitful because it just makes you feel overwhelmed. It makes you feel defeated and makes you feel like you're not good enough and less than.
Right.
So I think that wherever a woman is or man with their body, they need to find something that they love about themselves.
Right.
And I don't say like love yourself. I don't mean that because that to me, when people are like, just love yourself, I think that's candy coated water drops and it's bullshit.
Uh-huh.
We can't really give that much love to ourselves. Ultimately, it can only come from God and through people. But what we can do is, really have a sense of gratitude. And I think it's the gratitude is what can help relate into love. Like gratitude for having an able body. Gratitude because you can see, because your voice box works and you can speak.
Right.
Gratitude that you can walk and that you can eat and that you can whatever it is. You know, start having gratitude. Man, I'm grateful that my legs work. I think that's really good. And then starting to see things about your body that are beautiful. What is beautiful? And through those steps, I think that's good because it helps people to be in a positive place and to kind of look at it as, I'm not trying to defeat myself. I'm not trying to tear myself down and I hate myself and I'm fat and I got to change it. But now you're working from a place of, how can I just help myself even more? Let me help myself.
Yeah, it's not healthy anyway, you know, to be like that.
Yeah, so. But then again, I also see this movement of like, like if people are overweight and there's this idea of like, you know, I'm amazing and I'm fat and it's okay. Right. Well, yes and no, because it's not that, you know, you're a bad person if you're fat or anything like that. It doesn't make you less than.
Well, obviously not.
But,
you know,
is it healthy? I mean, is it healthy?
Yeah, I mean, rolls of fat do not look good and they're not healthy. So, you know.
Well, I mean, as far as what's considered sexy, there are men that love big women.
Yeah, but
even big women. So
yeah, I mean, I know there are, but usually, you know, I can't imagine you'd have a high self-esteem if you're obese. And,
I don't know.
You know,
there's some women that it doesn't hold them back. I just think that if it's impairing your, I think if your weight is making you unhealthy, then you just have to look at that and go, well, is that something that I want to live? Do I want to live with this?
Right.
You know. That is something that I think it's more not so much about looks driven, although it could be for some people,
right.
But I think it's healthy, you know, to take care of your body. I mean, you only have a heart and lungs and organs that can support a certain amount of body weight and everything.
Right,
and if
right.
you exceed that, but I mean, what I don't like about the whole weight thing though, for women, is that it becomes an identity thing.
Right.
It becomes how they're measured. Their standard, and I think that that's really unfair.
Yeah.
And it puts women in box. Well, if women are overweight, then you kind of, we like to villainize them a little bit, and we like to make them look out to be monsters, like that fat girl or that fatty or whatever. And now they're funny, or now they're just this, and they're not feminine. They're not tender. They don't have anything about them that's vulnerable because they're fat and they've got the guards up, and I just think it's sad because a woman's still a woman. Regardless of her size,
right.
And she's still beautiful because she's a woman, regardless of her size.
Yeah.
And I think that part is really sad to me, that women experience. And but yeah, I think too, this the weight thing is a really hard game for women. I have a friend who has been a size 2 and has been over 200 pounds.
Really?
She's gone back and forth.
Wow.
And she's been the skinny girl in the room, and she's been the obese girl in the room.
Wow.
And
how does that happen?
It's just, you know, those things run really deep. It's usually you know, people, we're all running from stuff, and
right.
and some people have.
But how do you go back to a size 2? That's what I don't understand. I mean,
it's through, you know, there's many different ways. I mean, through weight loss. There's I mean, you know, eating differently and exercising or abstaining from binging, things like that.
Right.
I think it's just a really, really rough road for a lot of people with that, especially
and they do
in LA.
Have food addictions and, you know, eating disorders and things like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So, again, you know, you can't judge those people because you don't know.
Well, that's the part that bothers me, is that culturally we stand in a place of kind of self-righteousness where we don't like the addictions that make people look ugly.
Right.
But every other addiction's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, we almost would prefer somebody to have a Coke addiction.
Yeah.
And be glamorous.
And that's the thing. Nobody sees that you have a problem. But when you eat, people can see it right away.
Yeah. It's
like,
oh, you got a Coke addiction. Heroin, chic. It's like we'd almost prefer that with like muddy mascara and like a fabulous outfit on, coming home late and be like, my life's so hard because I'm so fabulous. We almost would rather somebody have that problem than them be obese.
Yeah.
And the reality is that... you know, we're not all dealt the same cards. I know some people that are overweight, and they just can't eat the same kinds of foods that other people can.
Right.
Their body
metabolism
packs it on.
And, yeah.
I mean, there's some girls that have high metabolism and like to give skinny nutrition advice, and I want to smack them in their face.
Yeah.
Because my body's pretty average, but I have to work at it. I have to work hard at it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've realized, you know, I know what it's like to fight to be an average size weight and be healthy and have a good body. Because
so you're here to say it can be done.
Well, I don't know who I represent. I've never been obese, but I've definitely had to, you know, work on my weight.
Right.
And I know what it's like to it's not like I don't really get a lot of free passes. I can't just eat whatever I want.
Right.
I mean, there's consequences for me like that, you know, which for most people there are too.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to work on it. It's always a balancing game. Like, you know, how much can I work out? What can I eat? What can I get away with? What do I, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, but I just think that we also live in a society where thin is just, there's no too thin.
Yeah.
There's not such a thing as too skinny.
Yeah.
Which is stupid.
Well, I think there is.
Well,
I
do too. I think people should just be healthy. I think it's wherever you're healthy.
Yeah.
I mean,
but I mean, you have to admit, a good body is a good body, you know. I mean,
it's not universal.
No, it's not universal. That's why people appreciate it, because it is.
No, I mean, what people decide is a good body is
not universal. Okay.
So
right.
Some people, like, for example, I went to a club one time and they had these. This is funny. They had these girls like out there dancing on their thighs. You know those girls that are in the cages dancing and
with their
booty shorts, and they had these girls in there that had no ass. They were thin, super thin, but they were like, they slapped these clothes on these girls. They had no butt, no leg muscle, no boobs, and they're just like, shake on their stuff because I want to make some tabs. And I was looking at them like, this is embarrassing. They look like toddlers.
Yeah, like
actually,
little kids. Huh?
Yeah, they look like infants up there dancing. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, it's almost just, I think women are constantly taught to disappear. Like, be nothing. Be less. Be less. Be less. Be less. Be quieter. Be more sexy. Be more demure. Okay, be less.
Well, write a song about that. In the meantime, let's listen to a couple of your songs, because we've had requests.
Okay, put on The Garden.
The Garden.
Yeah.
Okay, The Garden is the default one. So, here's Kara's song, The Garden. You sing so well, but it definitely doesn't sound like you. Not your speaking voice at all.
I know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
This is cool. When did you write this song?
A couple years ago.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And who plays with you in the background?
I'm playing guitar, and there's a percussionist, and then there's an upright bass. It was in Houston.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice.
It was good. I mean, I love it, but I've evolved a bit more since then as an artist.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Should we play the other ones, too?
You could just save them. You know, play them when you do your outros or something. When we go to break, just put one of those songs on.
But people won't know that it's you. You know, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they will.
Might as well listen to see what Christy.
This is about my sister who took her life.
Oh, okay. No, I'm sure Greg is going to love this song.
Rock on, Greg.
Depressing, huh?
Rock on, Greg.
Is it a depressing song?
I think it's beautiful, but whatever.
We've all thought about it once or twice too. Yeah, this world could be pretty nice, pretty nice, pretty nice. Just a convenient out there for the way we feel, the way we feel. Time is the essence, and it was a yesterday ago. Faith can be nothing when you start to care, she said.
It's an unusual song, man. You know? I mean, it's not an easy song to sing, huh?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Well, play the whole thing another time, because I could tell, like, because parts of the songs have, they start off a certain way and then they build, and so we're cutting them off to where you're not really getting the meat of it.
Oh,
so
I see.
Play it another time when people can hear it.
Okay.
Because it doesn't really do the song justice to kind of go in and out of it. It's just, because it's not pop music.
Right. So you have to listen to the whole thing.
You have to listen to the whole thing.
Okay, then
I just think it does its song justice, or because it doesn't do great with little clips, because it's a soundtrack type piece.
Plus, it's MySpace. You know, you should have it on a CD where the quality is real good.
No, I do. I do have a CD of it with the master. But yeah, I mean, MySpace. Everybody does MySpace.
Huh?
Everybody does MySpace.
Yeah, but it's not good quality shit. You know, they compress the music.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound as good as it would on your iPod or, you know. On a stereo.
Mm.
So.
Well, I have it. I can bring it in.
Yeah. Yeah, you should bring that in sometime.
Da, 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 da. Or I can sing live one day. We can do that with my guitar. I don't know how it works. How would it work? Would it work fine?
Yeah. People do that all the time here.
Do they?
Yeah, you just bring in your guitar and you sing.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to do that. I'm going to bring my...
Even when you record your guitar to the computer, play it in front of a microphone. Don't connect it directly to the computer. That's not how you do it.
Okay. Sam. I like how
I'm telling you from experience. I'm just helping you out.
I like how Sam Wise goes, well, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. You see? You figured it out.
Sam Wise ends up with everything as, well, there you go. There you go. That's suicide. There you go.
So there's a missing family, and the police are thinking that they may have just run away.
The whole family decided?
The whole family.
What are they running from?
Southern California family missing since early February. Voluntarily left for Mexico. But they're saying apparent inactivity of bank cards, credit cards, and cell phones since they vanished continues to baffle police and trouble family members.
What?
You know? Yeah. So this detective says, I've been in this business for 35 years, but never seen anything like this. You know? They're saying it doesn't add up. If they left, I don't need to know why. The bottom line is I need to make sure they're okay, you know, so...
So this family abandoned, what'd they do? They abandoned their credit cards, or...?
No, they just haven't used them, you know, after they left town, and nobody's heard from them, you know? So, but they're saying that they left voluntarily, so they don't know if something happened or not, you know?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, who knows?
Wow.
Yeah, they're saying there's a surveillance video shows a family of four casually crossing border into Mexico, whatever that is. So who knows? Maybe they got killed, man. You know, I mean, Mexico, anything can happen.
So are you in? Do you like the tattooed look on girls?
No, I don't.
It's so in. I mean, it's so rampant.
You know what I just discovered the other night?
I respect it. I think it looks cool. I just can never do it. But I don't... It's like... It seems like it's not just the tattoos. It's like a different culture or something.
Right. Yeah, it's an attitude.
Some people...
You know?
Like, I have a lot of friends that have tattoos, but I'm not just talking about having some tattoos. I'm talking like the sleeves
Oh, I see.
The sleeves on the girls and then all over their stomach. I mean, like almost full body tattoos.
That's obviously overdoing it. But, I mean, I don't even like a flower or a butterfly or one of those things, you
really?
Know? Really? Yeah, I'm just not into tattoos. So the other night, I'm discovering that my daughter has one now.
What?
Yeah, near her wrist.
And what does she have?
What?
What does she have?
Like a yin-yang type of a thing. Yin-yang, you know?
Yeah.
She
just couldn't get a sticker, huh?
I guess not. I don't know.
Wow. What did you say to her?
Well, she knew how I felt about it. You know, but I hadn't seen her in a while, so she's free to, I guess, feels free to do whatever she wants. So there you go, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe she's trying to be rebellious or something.
Maybe that's a possibility.
Wow. So she's showing you guys her first boyfriend that she's had sex with just to freak you out.
Right.
And then she's got a tattoo. She's rocking.
Yeah.
And she's a 19?
And not to mention the piercing, the tongue piercing.
She's a tongue piercing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, apparently her mom lets her do just about anything she wants to do. I mean, she is 19, but still, you know?
Wow. What would I think? I mean, it's so funny because I have a really good friend that she's got, she's lip pierced right here, right. Uh-huh. And then she has ears pierced, and she has a nose piercing. And she's had several different piercings, but that's what she's got, currently got going on.
Yeah.
And she's got, you know, a few tattoos here and there. And, I mean, I love her to death. It has no, it's not a determining factor of anything.
Right. Not a deal breaker.
It, yeah. No, you got to be my friend because you're fucking ugly with the tattoos. No, she's actually super gorgeous. I mean, she's like a California blonde girl with all these uh-huh. alternative things. So it's really funny.
Right.
It's actually funny because it almost doesn't go together. But
yeah. What's amazing is how mainstream tattoo has become.
I guess that's what I'm saying is yeah. it's become so, I mean, in Texas, like, yeah, the bikers would have tattoos, or maybe older men that were in the Navy had the tattoos, but it wasn't like everybody had tattoos and right. piercings. And then I moved out to L.A., and it's kind of this huge uniform that people wear.
Right.
It's like an, it yeah. was like a sub. It's like a subculture that became the main culture.
Yeah. And what I don't understand is tattoos that you put on your body where you can't even see it, you know? You know how chicks put it on their ass and stuff, you know, where, you know, the only way anybody would see it is when she does doggy style or something,
yeah.
you know? So, I mean, what's the point in that? I don't understand, you know? Most people can't see it.
I don't know. It's like my friend Krista said. She's like, you know what? A lot of us moms now in this generation, you know, a lot of us still have the tramp stamp. And yeah. she's like, you know, it's interesting. And it was in. It's like, what's in style? I mean, there's a lot of things that are in style that right. then you're like, wait a minute, this isn't like style, trend, but do yeah. I want it permanently?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the problem with tattoos, you know? It's like, it's too permanent.
Yeah, I'm just not that committed. I'm just not that committed. But, I mean, I look at it. I mean, this is the newest picture of one of the alleged photos of Jesse James's second mistress.
Oh, I see. Yeah, she's got a sleeve for sure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something cool about the way it looks, though.
Yeah.
You don't think so?
She's totally not attractive to me. I
oh,
mean, she's
really?
Got fake boobs there. She looks older. Yeah. Let's see. We got a phone call. Let's see who that is. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, my question is this about the tattoos.
Yes. Yes.
The people who are tatted all over their bodies, what do they think they're going to look like when they're 70?
That's a good question. I've seen some 70-year-olds with tattoos. They don't look very good.
Yeah. I mean, what is it going to look like? It's all going to run together and be droopy. You're going to need a roadmap.
Yeah.
That's funny. I know who this is. I can recognize your voice.
Really?
You can?
Yes, it's Maisha.
What's crack-a-lacking, Carol?
Girl, what you doing? Hi, I got to call you. What's going on, honey?
You know, it just baffles me about the tattoo thing.
Well, you know, me too. I've been to some parties recently where I was the only one without tattoos, and they've got it all over their body with that flower in the hair and the lips and everything, and it's cool, but I don't get it either, because I'm like, what happens when it's not in style?
Right.
Exactly.
And what are you going to do about a job? There you go. Yeah, yeah.
Some people, you know, it's interesting, but they cover all their tattoos when they go to the job, and then they go home and they take off all their clothes so everybody can see it.
I guess if they're cover upable. I thought you were talking about me. What am I going to do about a job? I'm like, I'm working on it, Maish. I was like, lay off me.
You know, you have people, I mean, you see some of them, you know, they stop like right here, you know, like right at their neck, so
right.
you won't. So they'll be able to go out of mainstream, I guess.
Right.
Is that what we can call it? So they can blend in with, you know, with everyone else in the workplace.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do all that, just do it. I mean, but I don't get it. I don't have any tattoos. Don't plan on getting any. I don't get the whole thing. And
right.
like you just said, Sam, you know, it's covered up. So why do it if it's going to be covered up?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and how do you feel about piercings?
Oh, same thing.
Same thing, right?
Yeah, same thing. Why?
I know. My son's got like 2 gauges in his ears now,
ugh.
You know? And it's gross. I don't know why the hell they do this, man, but they feel they have to.
So, Maisha, are you going out to get a tramp stamp anytime soon?
Yeah, not so much.
No? What's going on with you? How's everything?
Everything's good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Everything is good, yeah.
How do you guys know each other?
Super awesome woman. She is, well, she's kind of a jack of all trades, but Maisha has a staffing agency that she owns
uh-huh.
and has hired me in my broke ass several times. I'm like, sign me up, girl. I will stuff an envelope. I'll be a crosswalker. I'll just hold that sign and tell people to stop and when to go. I'll go act like I know how to be a secretary and do copies.
Kara's great.
Yeah, it's funny, but no, she's been such a great friend, and we met through we both used to go to the same church.
Oh, I
remember
see.
Remember when
okay.
I said I went to a church that's predominantly African American? It was like me and two other white people.
Uh huh.
This is a church I went.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, but it didn't, you don't even notice that after like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm pretty much.
Maisha is probably going, what is this white girl doing here?
No, not at all.
No, huh?
No.
Yeah. No, she just blended in. You know, it was never about color.
Right.
It never felt like that. Yeah, I think what was interesting for me when I first went, Maisha, was, you know, I'm used to living in a world that's, you know, I'm not a minority, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that feels like. And so I go, and so for the first 10 minutes, and you're not really around any white people, you become aware that you're white.
Right.
And I've never been aware that I'm white.
Right.
And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm white and I'm not black. But after 10 minutes, you don't realize it because everybody's just so warm and down to earth.
Church, yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah, everybody's, and they're so cool. And like the people are just so awesome.
Yeah.
Just
I think
cool.
Everyone should have that experience to feel what it's like to be a minority.
Yeah.
Do you feel it now? How is it for you? I mean, when you're not like, if you're in a community that's outside of predominantly black or mixed, what do you notice it or what?
No, not at all. Because I grew up from elementary school, from kindergarten on, I went to a diverse school, so it's nothing for me. But I can imagine someone who didn't have a similar upbringing, you know, how they could feel awkward or out of place or just a little weird, but I don't at all.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
I've always wondered cool. that. I've always wondered what that would feel, what that, and then I did. I went to church and I felt it.
Yeah.
No, but it's cool. It was fun, and I loved kind of being in a different culture. Not that it was so different, but there are some different differences in the African American community with the white community. Kind of some.
Yeah.
Do you
know there? I mean, call a spade, there are.
Yeah, but you know, some stuff because of just everything blends in and so much. Some stuff isn't as dramatic as it used to be, but there are still some ways of communicating and things like that where, you're gonna. I noticed like the even just like going back to church, it's like so lively, right? Celebratory. People aren't afraid to clap or say hallelujah or amen and jump up and down. And then I go to other churches, I'm like, this is too damn white for me. And it's just nobody. Everybody's just a little more insular. They're just a little bit more, you know, not as celebratory. It doesn't mean it's not sincere. They're just not as, you know, open in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just communication's different. And so I like the whole gamut of it all. I feel like as people, we need it all. We need all those differences.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maisha, what do you do? What do you...
I own a staffing agency.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's what you said.
She's a business owner.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, maybe we need to staff Kara somewhere.
Oh, she has, believe me.
Yeah?
She does. When she's got jobs, or she's always pimping me out.
Yeah.
She's always like, hey.
Kara is always requested.
Yeah. Definitely.
There's a couple of clients that I've worked with that request me. I really like them.
I'm sure there
She's
are.
She's very popular with the clients. They love her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard not to love Kara, right?
Well, depends if you ask me to make copies.
Yeah, depends if you know her, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Maisha. Well, thank you so much for calling.
We that love you, girl.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And now you know our opinions on tattoos, so there you go.
Yes.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, girl. She's the coolest.
Yeah, you should ask her to come in sometime.
Yeah, we'll tell you.
She sounds like she's fun.
Well, she's really, really funny. One funny story is she staffed me at this law firm, and it was my first day there. And, like, one of the lawyers, he just – you know, lawyers can be kind of rude. I mean, I wanted to say
– Oh, yeah.
What's a good word for it?
Assholes?
Okay, I just didn't want to be the one to say it. So there you go. yeah, they can be kind of – it's just like a weird power thing.
Yeah.
And – everybody, it's just like that. And so I'm in there, and I'm all like, hey, how's it going? You know, answering the phones all happy. And then this guy has to leave really quickly. He gives me this huge stack of papers, and he says, go make copies of this. I need a copy of this.
Uh-huh.
I said, okay, fine. I went in there, and he's running downstairs to meet somebody, and he comes in the copy room. He's been rude to me all day.
Right.
He comes in the copy room, and I've had it at this point. And he's like, what are you doing? And I said, hey. I said, Albert, these things take time. I'll have it done when it gets done.
Uh-huh.
He goes, you're doing it one at a time? And then I said, I had the nerve to say, well, is there a faster way to do it? He was so pissed, he grabbed the papers from me, and then he, like, shoved them all in there.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I can't believe this. He's, like thinking I'm the biggest idiot in the world, and he's got somebody waiting on him. So he shoves the papers in the little stack, and he wants me to, like, and he walks away, and he doesn't push go.
Yeah.
So I'm like, shit, do I just stand here and stare at it, or do I push start? I don't want to mess it up. I already feel like an idiot. Yeah. I was like, well, carpe diem, boom. So I pushed go. I pushed the start button. And so it starts making copies, and then it gets jammed. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. I'm like, this can't go any worse. So then I'm trying to unjam it. I'm trying to not screw up his copies. Anyway, long story short, I mean, to this day, I mean, I run into him because I still work there on and off, and it's just so funny. So, yeah.
Well, obviously, you're not meant for an office job.
Oh, no, it's not really my thing. Right? But, you know, you do what you got to do to pay the bills. But, yeah, isn't that just freaking, yeah.
That's funny, actually, because I was reading yesterday that Xerox is celebrating 50 years of copies, of xerographic copies.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah, it is. It is. Think about it.
I want cake.
Cake?
Yeah, let's have cake.
I'll get you a copy of a cake.
Yeah, no, I'm going to get some cake today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know where you should go? Across the street, they have the best lemon bun cake you've ever had.
Yeah, that's not what I'm going for. You know what I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of, like, you know, wedding cake?
Yes.
Kind of
with
fluffy.
With a frosting and...
fluffy and stuff.
Yes. That's what you want.
Well, I mean, I'm just not getting my appetite back, and I think I can hold it down, so I think I'm going to put in as much as I can.
Yeah, just be careful. Do it gradually. Because it's like fasting, you know?
Yeah, I know. I can't eat that much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cake and, I think cake and chicken parmesan. Just put it in one big
Did you ever fast, like, for a day or two?
Yeah, I have.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like nothing?
I've always done with water or juice.
Water,
and
right.
It's usually a spiritual thing.
Yeah.
Or one time I did it for pure cosmetic reasons with the Master Cleanse.
Yeah.
And I did this juice stuff for 5 days, and I just couldn't take it anymore. I was so hungry. But it's interesting. When I've fasted, which I've only really fasted once for a spiritual reason, it was totally out of the blue, and I just felt like it was on my heart to fast. And I decided I just wasn't going to eat food, and I was just going to just drink, drink like smoothies or whatever. So I was still getting nutrition, but it was just something I was put on my heart. And honestly, I just felt I never felt hungry, and I was running every day, 5 miles, and I felt so alive, and I felt close. There was something about it that I know it was God, because the typical things that you would feel like headaches or fatigue, I just wasn't experiencing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it really brought me in a place where I was a little bit quieter, and it simplified things to where it was like prayer time with God, and everything was just a little more intense, and just developed intimacy more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what's interesting, is when you know you're fasting, if you're doing it for the right reasons, or if you're you know, it's, you're not really concerned with those things as much.
Right.
Because when I fasted...
It's not that easy to do, you know? I mean,
no,
we have
but when
Yom Kippur every year, you know, for the Jewish people and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not easy, you know? I mean, you're talking 25 hours of nothing, not even water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's supposed to be easy, but I think that there's... You can kind of put it in a spiritual drive and really take that and drive it home closer to God, where, you know, you just kind of go to prayer and... I mean, we underestimate what God can do spiritually in our lives, just filling you up so much where you're not really thinking about it, or you're not, or you're so full, and maybe it's there, but it's in the background.
Right.
And, you know, God is capable of doing that, because I'm just contrasting it with when I did the Master Cleanse.
Right.
I was in agony. I did it for 5 days.
Really?
I did it for 5 days, and I was drinking this juice.
That's that thing with the cayenne pepper and
stuff,
and
I was I was drinking this juice, and I wasn't I wasn't working out, and I was miserable. I was so hungry. I was drinking this juice, and I had a headache, and I was just like, this sucks. This is, and then I was like,
it's not normal.
It's not. And but then I fasted longer than that for spiritual reasons, and I didn't experience that. That's what I'm trying to say, is that God will take care of you in those times if it's for Him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? As opposed to, like, not that you can't, you know, do your own fast. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I noticed a total difference when I was running off of sustenance that God was giving me versus my own sustenance.
Right.
And I felt like 5 days I couldn't cut it.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
5 days is a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of stopped eating since Friday of last week.
Right.
So I really only had like a couple crackers here and there, and And that's just because I couldn't hold anything down.
Right.
But I'm so ready to eat.
Yeah,
like,
I'm sure.
We're not
I'm
made
sure.
to not eat.
Are you feeling like too weak or something?
Yesterday I was so weak.
Really?
I feel weak today, but yesterday I was like getting out of bed and just walking. You're just like, oh man, that's the reason why we eat, man.
Yeah.
There's a reason why your body needs nutrition, just to pick up your phone and like make your arm. But I mean, it's not that dramatic.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm ready to pack it in.
Sounds good. They said it was going to rain today, but it doesn't really look like it, right?
Are you kidding me? Right over here, look at that big freaking
cloud.
Yeah.
Really?
It's going to be total rainy.
I sure hope so, man. I love the rain.
You going to go out and play in it?
Yeah, if it rains. They usually say it'll rain and it doesn't, so go figure.
Well, go have a fun time then, Sam.
All right. Well, Kira, I think we're at the end. We talked about a lot of things today, including suicide, which bummed Greg out. But at any rate, thank you all for joining us, and we'll be back here tomorrow.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, originating from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. If you have questions about the show or would like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondence to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. We'll be right back.